The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. If you like our show, you're going to love the official Lakers podcast on Podcast One. Join Emmy Award-winning sports reporter Susie Schuster and co-host Aaron Larsoul as they discuss Lakers news of the day, breakdown games from the week, and have exclusive interviews from players, coaches, and sports personalities. So don't miss the official Lakers podcast every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
I got to get my pen.
Now we're live.
Got it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast.
Smooth.
Nice. We think that the audio is better.
Yeah.
Just making it better here.
We have a whole box over there to stop you popping the mic.
Or to allow you to sound louder.
No, I'm at a normal level. And what happens is we break everything because you talk too loudly and blow up the previous electronics. We have a new box here. And we have a new box over there. All designed just to stop you wrecking everyone's ears.
I'm wearing the wrong shirt because we are creeping back toward average with everything that we do.
Electronically.
Yes. Yeah. So let us know how the audio sounds. Steve Pelizzola here, Sam
Monson.
If you
don't like it, I do not want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
Give us your good feedback.
Yes.
Only.
Uh-huh.
All right. Can we get somebody to vet the YouTube comments on this one?
Right. Moderate them. I want to see nothing but glorious praise. That's how this regime is going to operate from now on.
That's all we deserve.
Yep.
Give me, buy some time.
Okay.
While I find my podcast sheet here.
Should we talk about our basketball exploits today?
Yes.
Because frankly, this is a new high watermark for me.
You were absolutely... Before I discuss my triple-double, let's get into just how good you were.
Well, you were terming me most improved player, having gone from like on a 0 to 100 scale, having gone from single digits up to like 40s maybe.
Yeah.
Right? On a good day. This was over 50 today.
Oh, well over 50.
Right.
Especially shooting. You had a couple of rebounds in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. You did a nice job. But I mean,
you were streaking.
You went from looking like a guy who had never played basketball before.
Mm-hmm. Really looking that
to
way.
To a guy that might not have the prettiest form in the world, but you're putting basketballs.
In the hoop.
In the hoop.
Yeah.
Like 10 points in a 30-point game. That was pretty good.
I thought so. You were streaky. For like the first 2/3 of the game, you couldn't make a shot.
See, I'm one of those guys. If you just say, look, 16 points, 16 rebounds, 10 blocks, 5 assists, you're like, oh, yeah, that's a pretty good game. Let's just stick with those numbers.
I like, though, that you asked the question after the game. You're like, I wonder how I'd fare against other people of 6'10".
Oh, it'd be ugly.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like how much of an inbuilt advantage is simply being a foot longer in all directions than everybody else?
I don't know. Given how much I play down to my competition when I'm with you guys, maybe I'd raise my game.
Yeah.
Against other 6'10 folks.
I mean, it's possible. I'm just saying there's a lot of plays you make currently because you have, you know, your limbs reach places that others don't.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, it'd be pretty bad if I went up with somebody my size, much stronger, more athletic.
Right. That would be
and more skilled.
Going.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah.
Anyway, I had a triple double.
How many of them were rebounds?
I 16 points.
You must have way more than 16.
All right, 22.
Frankly, we missed way more.
Andre
shots
Drummond
than
here.
There.
16 points, 22 boards, 10 blocks for the triple double, and 5 assists because of you, because you kept hitting your shots.
Right. I would say we missed way more shots than for you to only have 16 rebounds.
Wait till people want video evidence for this thing. I need somebody to keep my stats.
Already.
Somebody's got to keep my stats
on me. Official stat keeper.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if I'm going to become a high-end Y player, somebody's got to keep track of my progress.
You wanted to bail today because it was raining. I was like, you were never going to get to be a high-end Y player if you just like, oh, there's some moisture in the air. I'm not walking 2 blocks.
Well, you made me better because we did it.
Yeah, there you go.
I was going to Uber over there 2 blocks.
Fair enough.
All right, are we ready to go?
Yeah, there's NFL stuff happening.
What week are we in, 10?
Yes, heading into 10.
Where did the time go? Football.
I don't know. Thursday Night Football, Chargers and Raiders.
Yeah.
That's a.
Why don't you set up all the games today?
Really? All of them? Okay. Well, the Chargers and the Raiders are playing on Thursday night, which most of you will have already seen. So I'm curious what Chargers team showed up, because it's already happened, unless you're watching on YouTube. Because last week was a weird aberration of a team.
It was.
That showed up, dominated the Packers, weren't supposed to. We've been talking about how the Raiders are actually kind of, you know, better than we expected them to be. So this actually could be an interesting game.
Yeah, Derek Carr right now has the number 2 passing grade.
Ooh.
In the NFL. If you take out Drew Brees from the sample size, because he only has 92 dropbacks, Derek Carr is number 2 in passing grade, but number 8 in overall grade. Remember those fumbles at the goal line and various things like that, because his rushing grade is a 29.6. So that's what's dragging Carr down a little bit overall. But the number 2 passing grade, he's throwing the ball extremely well, completing over 71% of his passes going in. So I'm expecting a good game. This was also, remember Derek Carr was having that really sweet 2016 season?
Yeah.
And then he ran into Kansas City on Thursday Night Football. And it was like 2.5 yards per attempt. It was just it was bad. So let's even keep it up.
Okay.
Prime time.
All right. Which already happened. We both picked the Raiders, so I assume we were right.
Yeah, we're right.
Okay. Perfect.
Raiders moving to 5-4, huh?
Yeah.
How about that? What a story.
All right. The next game. Interesting NFC battle. Carolina Panthers at the Green Bay Packers. Cam Newton has been shut down. That foot injury that was never going away has sufficiently not gone away to the point they said it's not coming back this year. Take the time on IR. Kyle Allen's going to be starting. So it's Kyle Allen versus Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, he's officially out.
Yes,
we knew that.
For the rest of the year.
We kind of knew that.
Yeah, I mean, like, at some point, this whole never-ending foot injury had to actually start to get better. Otherwise, you know, this is inevitable.
Did we discuss Cam at all on the other podcast?
Generally.
On how...
We've discussed it before.
How that MVP... That MVP season... Yeah, because you talked about fans not having any middle ground with him, right?
Yeah, generally...
Was that on the podcast that we discussed?
No, I think generally we had a conversation about how Panthers fans... Like, Cam Newton stands in particular are some of the most firmly entrenched in their beliefs I have ever encountered. Like,
yeah.
Even Trubisky stands 2 weeks ago jumped off the bandwagon. It's all right, I find you. You were right. I'm out.
Yeah.
Seen enough. Cam Newton stands. Yeah, you could spend the rest of your life with him playing at this level and they would still be like, no, he's great.
There's a real possibility that the Panthers are going to move on from Cam Newton. They save a whole bunch of money, not a lot of dead money if they get rid of him, move on. And I think it's fair when you look at Cam Newton's career to this point, if you just say unique player, nobody's been used in the run game the way that he has.
Mm-hmm.
Not even Lamar Jackson, right? Because it's more, it's a powered downhill run. I mean, he's what people hoped Tebow was going to become, essentially.
It is.
And all that said, mid-tier quarterback, and I think to me 2015 is the biggest outlier of the decade.
2015,
that was his MVP season.
2015 was the season you keep thinking Jameis Winston is gonna have.
That's just the example that I use.
But that's what it is.
Style of player,
where sooner
as passer,
all of the stars aligned and he stopped doing all of the things that he did badly and kept doing the things that he did well and did them to a really high level. That was like everything put together. That's the season you keep thinking Jameis Winston will have. And I say it's never going to happen. For Cam Newton, it happened. And we got that one incredible MVP caliber season. And the thing about him that makes... See, the reason he is a difficult... This is back to your pie chart / eyeball diagram. The reason that he's a difficult person to talk about is because he is capable of doing pretty much everything you need him to do at some point, right? If it's sort of... The broader version of he can make all the throws, you know? And what we've always said is, well, yeah, but how often? And, you know, what happens in between? And that's the relevant part. Cam Newton can do basically everything you need him to do. The question is, how often does he do them and how much bad happens in between those things? And so you can't have it, you get these irritating conversations where people are like, well, he's incredible at doing X because here are these five plays where he did it. Like, yeah, but the point is other quarterbacks do it at a greater rate. And he's actually, when you look at everybody, he's actually not very good at doing that. Now, he may be on certain plays. It's like the accuracy thing, right? If Cam Newton can be spectacularly accurate.
Oh, yeah.
Just not often.
Right.
And the point about accuracy is it's not ever, like, look, I can deliver a perfect 30-yard pass every now and again, right? But it's not a high percentage play for me.
Right.
Now, so if I can deliver it once every like 40 pass attempts, am I an accurate quarterback because that one time I was able to do it? No.
If I post that highlight on Twitter, you are.
Right.
But that's all that matters.
Yeah. So that's the point with Cam Newton, right? He can be extremely accurate. He just doesn't in overall terms as much as, you know, a Drew Brees. Drew Brees is maybe the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. Cam Newton is at the other end of the spectrum. But you can dig out a whole bunch of plays where Cam Newton looks like a spectacularly accurate quarterback. And that's true for basically every facet you delve into with him.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. I think a lot of people... So I think the disconnect with Cam Newton analysis is a lot of people either are doing the can-do stuff because he's got a laser for an arm, just an absolute cannon, and he's got that special running ability, power, rushing ability, all that stuff, right? And when you're a can-do guy versus a how often guy, I feel like people lean towards that high end play and think that's what you are.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at it from, we've got evidence of him playing from 2011 to 2018, we'll say, right? And there's one season where he played like an MVP, and every other season, I think it was one other year where he graded top 10 for us. So to me, he's not an MVP who had seven average seasons. He's an above average quarterback. Okay. Borderline top 10 quarterback during his stint in the NFL who had his one peak season.
Yeah.
But people like to reverse engineer it and say he's a top 8 quarterback who had injuries and has had O-line issues and has had wide receiver issues. And it's like, I'm going to use the 7-year sample size of slightly above average play combined with 1 year of elite MVP play and say, you know, this is pretty much what he is. And that MVP season, the biggest outlier of this decade with regard to quarterback play.
And I think the can-do mentality gets magnified when we're talking about Cam Newton because he does it across every facet, right? Most quarterbacks, when you're talking about can-do, it's typically like arm, you know, as he can make all those throws or he can't, you know. So Joe Flacco is another example of a can-do quarterback, right? But Joe Flacco has never had Cam Newton's ability to run between the tackles or do some of the other things he can do.
Right? Yeah, right.
So the problem with Cam Newton is he can do all these things across the entire spectrum. If you got like peak Cam Newton play across everything, he's the best quarterback we've ever seen. Problem is you don't ever. You get a piece of it every now and again. So the guys that really want to focus on that stuff think he's amazing.
So that's what I would say. That's the difference between analyzing traits versus analyzing production. If you're analyzing traits and they never change, then no matter what Cam Newton does on the football field or no matter what Aaron Rodgers does on the football field, you're just like, well, he's the best.
Yes.
Right. He's got the best this, 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 and this. And, you know, again, I think the difference between a Cam Newton and a Drew Brees, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, and the guys that have clearly been better than him is the how often.
Yeah.
And doing the easy stuff and all that stuff. Okay. So
with that in mind, let's talk some quarterbacks who are actually playing in the game.
I thought that was a worthwhile discussion.
Sure.
For right now. We'll take it more to the offseason.
That's fine.
Because Cam might be moving on. Kyle Allen could be a bit of is it a Kyle Allen coaster now? Roller coaster? Mm-hmm. He's been up and down. We just wrote him off a couple weeks ago. Last week, he came back with a pretty good game. And then all that said, you know, the big body of work, right? Is he the guy that you're going to build around? I'm certainly not sure about that yet. But for an undrafted free agent, overall, it's been pretty good.
It has. I think the very first game he played was really good. And he was accurate and he kind of highlighted what the Panthers had been subjected to with an injured Cam Newton playing and trying to get it done by himself. And we saw what Kyle Allen can do. And honestly, he's never got back to that level since. And some of the play between then and now has been ugly. Now he's bounced around, but he really, that first game was his best. And he really haven't seen him reach that level since. So, yeah, I mean, for him now, it's interesting because he's not in the same boat as Gardner Minshew anymore in terms of waiting for the guy whose job it is to get back healthy and looking over your shoulder.
That's his job now. Yeah.
He's got the next half of the season. Like, unless he truly stinks it up and they have to throw Will Greer out there, like, he knows he's got the rest of the season to really, you know, get in a groove, try and get this thing under control and prove that he can be a starting quarterback going forward and probably a starting quarterback for this team. Because, like, the logical answer to that would be Cam Newton gets moved on, whether it's cut or traded. So I think it's a big time for Kyle Allen. And then the other interesting quarterback is the Packers. This feels like a game that the Packers need to bounce back in because they got blitzed last week by the Chargers. Nobody expected that to happen. Rodgers was pretty pissed off after the game, talking about, you know, we got carried away. We basically started believing our own hype too much. This feels like the kind of game where if you're going to say that kind of stuff, you need to really come back and crush it.
This also feels like one of those games when Aaron Rodgers speaks and you know he's angry about something or calling out his teammates or process or whatever it is, that he's probably going to back it up.
Right.
I think he's going to back it up.
So the other interesting thing about this game is that Green Bay's defense, so they started off the season, obviously they've been winning a lot of games, so everything's been going well overall. But they looked really impressive early. The defense looked pretty phenomenal. Jaire Alexander looked like the best young cornerback in the game. The defensive line was crushing people. That defense has been quietly regressing and not being as good or not being nearly as dominant for a while now. So, you know, we think of it as, well, this is a really tough defense for Kyle Allen to be facing. Yeah, I mean, it's okay. It's not great.
They've given up. As a team, they've given up over 20 points every game dating back to week 4 now. That was after starting the season, giving up 3, 16, and 16. And, we talk a lot internally here at PFF or on the podcast about how good defense is often dictated by the offenses that they play. Mitch Trubisky, week 1. Road division outdoor Kirk Cousins, week 2.
Hmm.
But, you know, if you're doing this whole, like, adjust for competition stuff, that week 2 game where they gave Cousins one of the worst grades in the entire NFL is looking good as he plays better.
Yeah.
For whatever that's worth. And then they ran, you know, Flacco in week 3. But since then, Carson Wentz in the Eagles, Dak in Dallas, Stafford in the Lions, Carr in the Raiders, Matt Moore in the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. So they've run into some of the better offensive systems or quarterbacks. And then last week, Phillip Rivers. So the defense that looked really good against Trubisky, Cousins, Flacco doesn't look as good against the Wentzes and Dax and Staffords and Cars of the world.
Yep.
Guys that are playing better. So, yeah, I think they have some questions to answer there. Both teams have a pretty good pass rush up in that top 10 range.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they'll be a factor in this game as well.
I mean, we talked about them in one of our videos this week. The additions of Za'Darius and Preston Smith for that Green Bay defense has been huge. I mean, those guys have both been generating a ton of pressure. They're both able to move around the defensive line and come at you from different places. They've been huge. Kenny Clark still remains really good. He's playing an absurd number of snaps.
Yeah, he is.
Which I don't think is necessarily the best thing in the world for him. But they do still have a lot of extremely talented players. It's just that overall that defense isn't as good as I think it looked earlier in the year, which means, you know, Kyle Allen has a shot. Like, he can, Kyle Allen and Christian McCaffrey in particular, they can get stuff done against this defense.
If you're just looking where defenses rank using PFF grades, the Panthers are 8th. Packers are 14th.
Yes.
Right now, just using overall defensive grades. So it should be a good game. I'm expecting a Green Bay bounce back. Where are you going on this one?
Same. And in fact, all of us are.
Oh, we're all going Green Bay, huh?
Everybody going Green Bay.
Take the better quarterback?
Yeah, pretty much.
Fair.
Plus, you know, bounce back. He's pissed. He's not happy.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers, he strikes me as one of those people. Like you. You're like this, right? When you're pissed off, you play better. In fact, I really should take advantage of that and annoy the crap out of you during games.
If we're on the same team.
Rodgers feels like that kind of player. When you piss him off, he plays better.
What do you mean? Like on the court? That's how I am?
Yeah. When you get mad, you play way better. You're like the dude from... which one of the white men can't jump guys was it that got better? It was Sidney, right? Sidney got better when he was mad.
Offhand, but
so, yeah. So whatever Woody Harrelson's character's name would spend the game pissing him off.
Oh, right.
Because yeah. He played better when he's mad.
Yeah.
That's you. You are Sidney. Now, okay, he has some better hops than you.
I do get angry sometimes.
But that's what I'm saying. You need to be mad, and then you play at your best.
Okay.
Anyway,
well, it's your job.
Yeah, moving on. Sunday Night Football. I'm going to throw that in here.
By the way, the Monday Night Football game should be up here in this Game of the Week.
I thought segment. About it, but I went with two, and that was, it would have been three
Let's
games.
Let's flip it up. Let's have three.
You want to do three? Okay. Yeah. Well, no, can't do that because we have our thing. That will screw Ken up.
We're out.
Can't
we're
do it.
Right
cannot do it. Not happening.
We'll give it more time at the end, though.
Sunday Night Football. Minnesota Vikings at Dallas Cowboys. Fascinating matchup.
It is. I love this game here. Vikings road game, but in a dome. So Cousins has a shot. But it's in prime time. There's so many things. A dome.
Goes either way.
We'll prime time game.
Cancel it all out because we've already established that he's on the downswing of the roller coaster.
Oh, so he's
so
done.
Come back up at the end of the season.
Yeah, he's absolutely done.
Yeah.
Dak has remained one of the more efficient QBs in the league this year. I think, I don't know if he's lost a little luster after those first 3 weeks where he did, you know, all the stats were pointing toward MVP candidate and all that stuff, despite, you know, who they were playing.
Yeah.
Dolphins, Giants, Redskins.
That'll help.
But he's settled in. This is clearly his best season, right?
Yeah.
And that's a huge deal for Dallas. And the other thing about Dallas is, like, the O-line is maybe not everything that we expected. The defense hasn't been everything that we expected. So they're winning games, but they're doing it in other ways. And Dak's stepping up overall.
Did you know that this game features the two highest players in the NFL in yards per route run?
Did not.
Stephon Diggs is number one, the only player in the NFL above 3 yards per route run. And, you know, it's a vaguely obscure stat that PFF has, right? So if you're not familiar with it, anything above 3 is pretty absurd. It's Julio Jones level of, like, Julio is basically the only player that is consistently in and around 3. Everyone else will get there every now and again, then fade off and jump back. Now, interestingly, because the Falcons are a hot mess, Julio's way further down this year, 2.3. But Stephon Diggs is up above 3. Number two is Amari Cooper, who's at 2.98. So he's right at that 3 benchmark as well. Those two guys are like a good 10th of a yard per route run ahead of anybody else. The next guy is Michael Thomas. But so what's interesting is that Stephon Diggs has done that despite completely disappearing in some games.
Right.
He goes completely AWOL and they don't target him at all. And yet he's still generating more yardage per route on the field than anybody else. The reason I bring that up, so one, is this going to be a big game for Stephon Diggs? But more intriguing to me is the Amari Cooper side of it because, you know, he's one of the best route running receivers in the NFL. How the hell do the Vikings cover him?
So play zone.
Yeah.
2-4-6.
You're going to need.
It's a 2-4-6 game.
Yeah. Like their corners against Amari Cooper could see some really ugly plays out there. You know, Trey Waynes. We've talked about him before. His biggest weakness is shifting directions laterally. Right. Amari Cooper will cause problems if that's true. Like, ironically, Trey Waynes should be able to cover guys like Tyreek Hill, who runs in a straight line, but Tyreek Hill's just that much faster than him. But Waynes coming off an ugly game. Xavier Rhodes is not the same player anymore. Like, at that point, you're down to guys like Mike Hughes and Mackenzie Alexander inside. That's probably not going to go tremendously well either. So, and then, aside from all that, A, who's going to cover Amari Cooper? The answer is they don't have anyone that can. And B, even if you manage to do that, Michael Gallup's had a pretty good season himself. Like, if you take away his drops, he's had a really good season. And most of those came in that one game where he couldn't catch anything. Like,
Minnesota, yeah, we know drops could certainly be a little overrated.
Minnesota covering Dallas's receivers, to me, is like the key to this game. If they can't figure out a way to do that, I just don't know how they can stop that offense.
If you're into good, strong offensive play calling.
And who isn't?
And who isn't? And you know, we love when guys use play action. Just use more play action. Just do it and throw the damn ball. Kirk Cousins, number 3 in the NFL, or tied for 2nd in the NFL in play action percentage behind the 2 guys in Kansas City. Who is tied with Mahomes. Number 1 right now is Matt Moore when he's been out there. 39% play action. Dak right now tied up at 12th, 28%. But those are high. Anytime you're close, you're in the 30s or close to 30, that's a high play action rate. You know, so that's a big part of Dak's success this year and Cousins' success. Cousins with a passer rating of 125.8 when using play action.
Mm.
So we're going to see a lot of that. And I want to see this Vikings pass rush. Is Tyron Smith not what he's been?
This is,
in the past.
Marquee matchup. On the other side is maybe even more interesting, because this was last week was the first week that Danielle Hunter was kind of shut down.
We had Mitchell.
Mitchell Schwartz right. got him. But Lyle Collins has been playing at that kind of level this year. So yeah. can he do it against him, or does Hunter bounce back to being the dominant force he's been before last week?
Yeah, there's a lot of really good matchups in this one. Anytime you got the Dallas interior and you got, you know, the Vikings D tackles, you've got Eric Kendricks running around making plays.
Kendricks versus Zeke.
Ooh, that's a good way of matching it up.
Yeah.
I like this one, man. And you've got Kellen Moore's play calling against a Mike Zimmer defense.
Yep.
I feel like every week it's like QB versus Mike Zimmer defense. I just love those matchups every week, though. Yeah. I like the cat and mouse game there. So should be a good one. Massive playoff implications.
Yeah,
in this.
There are indeed. Yeah, you need to wait until you finish talking before you hit the cough button to mute yourself.
I'm not going to lie. I'm struggling here.
Just a pro.
It's a challenge not to, you know, fighting a cold a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Then why am I sitting in here with you?
It's not.
Okay. All right.
You probably gave it to me, whatever you had a couple weeks ago.
It was ages ago. No.
Because your germs probably just sit on the desk.
Sitting on the lingering.
Yeah.
We both went Dallas, as did everybody except Neil. Neil went with the Vikings.
Oh, he's a Cousins primetime believer.
Now, if we were on NFL Network, we would have a skanky wolf ears thing, and you'd have to put it on and howl because you lone wolf the pick. But we're not going to do that, Steve.
What? Who does that?
The NFL Network people. Rich Eisen sticks on this like mangy furry ear set and howls at the moon because they lone wolf the pick.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That was like, I had a baseball story.
No, don't do that. So,
do you know what it's called when you warm up in a game and don't get in?
A crappy way to spend an afternoon?
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
But then you have to wear a hat after the game if it was a deflated football. So if you're a relief pitcher, you warm up, you don't get in. I don't know if I can tell you what it's called.
Okay.
But you got to wear a hat.
Sure.
I was just thinking of the camaraderie. There's a lot of camaraderie over at NFL Network. That's great. Jack Farrell would love it. Our old friend Jack.
Yeah.
That'd be an idea that he comes up with.
Anywho.
By the way, are we both on NFL Network tomorrow? Are you on tomorrow?
Yeah.
I am too.
How are you on?
Good Morning Football.
Oh.
What show are you doing?
The one that isn't Good Morning Football.
NFL Now?
NFL Now, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Is Friday, and this could be today for you guys listening.
Don't we have a herd hit as well. Are we everywhere tomorrow?
We're all over TV. We're supposed to be nice, laid-back, mail-it-in Friday, right?
Apparently not.
Not at all.
Wall-to-wall television.
A lot of hard work. Who's doing the herd?
I don't even know. The worst thing about the NFL ones, though, is we have to put on makeup and a suit and stuff.
Yeah, for 5 minutes.
Right. That's a real pain in the ass.
Mine's in the morning, too.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, it's good because it gives me time to... Not let my hair get out of place.
Exactly. Yeah, the hair won't have had a chance to get away from you by then.
Yeah, so tune in. I'll be on Good Morning Football, 9:30 a.m. You'll be on NFL Now, whenever that is.
Yeah.
150
140. Yeah, sometime between 1 and 2.
Look at that. Owning NFL Network tomorrow.
Right.
Everybody. Or
anyway,
today.
So, Atlanta Falcons are playing the New Orleans Saints, Steve.
Yeah, I'll stop distracting us.
Yeah. So, this feels like the kind of game where right now the Falcons are like... something you find like at the side of the street and you're not entirely sure if it's dead or not. You just poke it with a stick and see if it's
the Falcons.
Yeah. So honestly, this game, it's like poke the Falcons with a stick, see if it's still alive. And if not, the Saints are going to rack up 50.
Yeah. I kind of have the same take. It's either like, this is pretty obvious. The Falcons can't cover anybody. The Saints have Drew Brees in that passing attack.
Yeah.
In a dome, of course, because these guys don't play outside.
No.
And they're just going to pass for 500 yards all over them.
Yeah.
Or the Falcons. Every year you see this, you get that one win team or two win team playing for pride. Mm. It's a divisional game. So weird stuff happens in divisional games.
Yeah. So this is the thing, right? I think ultimately the Falcons are a dead, rotting corpse of what used to be a football team. But here's the danger. Have you ever seen like a whale gets washed up on shore, right? And it gets, I don't know what it does. It like decays, it ferments, and it sort of expands. It gets like blown up like a balloon. And then every now and again, it pops and just explodes because of all the gas that had built up from it decaying. This is what's happening here, right? The Falcons are slowly decaying in front of our eyes, right? And maybe at some point when somebody pokes it with a stick, it just explodes and they get wrecked. So like the Saints just cruising along. It's like, oh, look at this messy thing, right? What is that? Is that alive? Is it dead? Saints walk up to this Falcon's corpse, prod it with a stick, and then boom, it just explodes. You know, meat detritus hanging from Drew Brees' face as the whole thing blows up in his face, and somehow the Falcons escape with a 3-point win.
You done with your metaphor?
Yeah, right now. Is that what's going to happen, or are the Saints just going
to
win?
Could you give that explanation to our listeners in football terms? What does that even look like? Deion Jones pick sixes and...
Well, they wander up.
Brees randomly just making terrible decisions.
They think it's a done decision. It's like those games you talk about where there's literally no reason where one team's going to win, so they will.
Yeah, I mean, these teams still have to play twice. I think they play Thanksgiving night as well for the second time for the second year in a row. I think at least one of those games, Atlanta gives them a game. They'll at least, yeah. You know.
I'm just saying, look, they're
be a competent division rival.
On the way out, but maybe this is the game where, you know, it all blows up in New Orleans' face.
Yikes.
Or maybe it's not and they win handily, which is what we think will happen.
We all take New Orleans.
Yeah.
In this one.
Buffalo Bills at Cleveland Browns.
You are going to continue hosting, huh?
I am. Apparently you told me I was doing it, so I'm going to roll with it.
Go for it.
Josh Allen versus Baker Mayfield, Steve.
That's what I'm saying.
And what's interesting is...
Is the thing to watch.
Yes, it is. I mean, it has to be, right? There's no other option right now.
Yeah, coming into the year, by the way, we said Baker, his schedule this year, he's going to play every... I believe it's every quarterback
from that draft class.
Plus Kyler Murray.
Huh.
Like as far as intriguing matchups, like if Baker was playing well, there'd be a lot of intriguing matchups. It's like everybody that he was drafted over, plus the guy that replaced him at Oklahoma, all in one season.
Well, what's really interesting about this one to me is that, you know, so to most people, there was a discussion about Baker Mayfield versus Josh Allen around the draft time, right? To us, it wasn't. It was clearly Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, whatever we thought about him. And we did think that there was a pathway to NFL success for him.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't in the same conversation. Like Baker Mayfield, clearly the number one prospect, Josh Allen somewhere lower down. We would have taken him, what, top of the second? Or did you sneak him into the first by the end of it?
I said first round.
Okay.
Still for him.
So, you know, first. But we're talking about essentially a whole round difference between the two of them. Right?
And by the way, because of positional value, I'd put a whole bunch of quarterbacks in the first round because they're all worth the risk just in case.
Whereas now, it's actually a really interesting conversation because Baker's really not playing well. Josh Allen has shown stretches where he's playing, or facets where he's playing well, and even stretches. Like it's an interesting battle now, head-to-head, in a way that I didn't think it ever would be.
It's closer. I still think that there's a two-year body of work in which last year Baker played pretty well. You know, one of the best rookie seasons that we've seen. I just think all the people that are writing Baker off right now could certainly look silly.
Oh, they definitely
in the next couple of years.
So the concern, though, is, yes, this is true. We're always dealing with small sample sizes whenever you're in a season because you don't know if you're going through a 2015 Cam Newton season and it's, you know, you're dealing with a complete outlier or if this is a trend in a certain direction or whatever.
I mean,
same
even,
in reverse, right?
Even if you just look at Baker's touchdown and interception rate, like absurdly unlucky touchdown rate.
Yes.
And absurdly unlucky interception rate. Like just flipping those two and the perception's going to change in his life.
Having said that, Baker Mayfield is playing worse.
Absolutely is.
It's getting worse. And the bad things are all magnifying together. And so I always like that replacements metaphor of the quicksand thing of you get stuck in quicksand. You keep the harder you fight, the worse it gets. It feels a lot like that with Baker
pressing
right now.
More and more.
It's that the worse he struggles against the weight of what's coming down on him, the worse things get. And we just sink deeper and deeper into the quicksand and we're not pulling our way out of this. And, you know, we've talked before, it's not all his fault, but he's the guy that's getting judged. And I don't see it turning around anytime soon because I don't see what's going to change.
I'll say this. This is not an easy game to get it back.
And that's the thing.
Again,
right?
just offensively for the Browns going up against this really nice Bills defense. That's going to be a challenge. Yeah. I mean, I think there's just a lot of things that the Browns need to get better at.
Yeah, they do. And
there's a lot.
So that's what concerns me is I don't see the sweeping changes happening that are going to pull Baker out of the tailspin.
Is there a point where Odell Beckham is just going to just be like, look, I'm a superstar receiver. Like, feed me 15 targets and like, let's go.
But the thing is, they've kind of been feeding him anyway. Like, he gets a lot of targets. It's just that he hasn't been
but also
necessarily
just,
make it taking advantage.
Just getting him performing to that, because we
well, that's
there was a point
problem.
In his career where he looked like he was in that Antonio Brown, Julio Jones.
Yes.
Who am I missing up at the? I mean, it's AJ been into
Green.
AJ Green. I mean, like all these guys, DeAndre Hopkins, Michael Thomas.
Yeah,
like he was supposed to be in that conversation. He has not been really for a while.
If I asked you which receiver, Odell Beckham or Jarvis Landry, had more targets, who would you say?
Because you're asking me Landry?
Yeah, it's actually a trick question because they both have the same, but that in and of itself.
I'm wrong no matter what.
Right. But that in and of itself makes your point, right? That they're not actually, they need to be, look, Jarvis Landry shouldn't have the same number of targets as Odell Beckham. Whatever you think about Landry, they're two different talent receivers.
No, when you're building this receiving core, it's like, all right, here's our go-to guy, Odell Beckham, right? We're going to go to him. And then Landry's going to just take the pressure. I mean, think it was like Moss and Welker back in the day, which is like, all right, Moss is our downfield go-to guy. And when the matchup dictates it, you go to the underneath guy, right? Like you go to Jarvis Landry.
I mean, obviously the real problem is that Rashad Higgins has six targets. Damian Ratley has more than twice of that. That's an issue.
So Baker's regression correlates directly
this
to Rashad Higgins.
I'm saying, right? All I can, look, I would simply make the point that Rashad Higgins, when he had DeShone Kizer throwing him the ball, was garbage, right? The second you moved DeShone Kizer out of the equation, suddenly he looks like a superstar with Baker Mayfield. Then you take Rashad Higgins out of the lineup, and now Baker Mayfield doesn't look so good. I would suggest that you connect the two of them, and good things happen.
Yeah.
The end.
All right. You might not be wrong.
So despite thinking that Baker's probably going to struggle, I went Cleveland, as did you.
Yeah, I just think at some point, the talent on that team will come together and play better. I think Buffalo's playing a little bit above where they should be. Cleveland's playing a little bit below where they should be. That'll converge here in the second half of the season. I'm taking Cleveland at home.
We had a few people go Buffalo. It's a bit of a split. A
couple Buffaloes.
Bit of a split. Baltimore Ravens at Cincinnati Bengals. They're here. This is home. I thought this was in Baltimore for some reason.
No, you can go get Lamar's autograph.
Oh, sweet. We can also watch Ryan Finley play football.
Yeah, Ryan Finley making his debut.
Potentially to take advantage of all of the ginger talent.
Yes, this is the
one game.
This is the ginger game.
The ginger game.
A lot on the line here.
How do you think the ginger's going to do?
He's going to do well because Carson Wentz is
on a
bye. Okay. You know, this is one of those games where it's like Ryan Finley. It's kind of like if Daniel Jones did the same exact thing as Eli Manning. It's intriguing because you didn't know he was going to do it, and he's a rookie. So Ryan Finley could go put out one of those games that looks exactly like what Andy Dalton has done at a time this year. You'd but be because it's his debut, you're like, oh, showed some promise.
Yeah.
So I think because Daniel Jones is Eli Manning light and Ryan Finley is Andy Dalton light, you'll get an Andy Dalton-ish type of game. And it's going to be like, oh, intriguing debut by Ryan Finley in a losing effort against the Ravens.
I think it could be a lot uglier than that.
You think so?
So we talked a bit before, I think, on Monday's podcast about just how hard the Bengals were trying to hide the disaster that is their offensive line. Like Dalton has the fastest average time to throw in the NFL. They have been trying to hide that offensive line more than anything. So this is on the Wednesday one. Sorry. So people won't have heard this if you're listening only. So the Raven or the Bengals have, I think, the second worst graded offensive line in the NFL, right? Really bad in the 40s, catastrophic. But they have the lowest average time to throw in the NFL. Dalton is getting the ball out of his hands quicker than any other quarterback in the league. They are desperately trying to hide just how bad that mess is, and it's still grading that badly, right? Now you're putting Ryan Finley back there, and one of the biggest sort of traits of these young quarterbacks, the thing that they struggle with the most is getting the ball out of their hands quickly. They tend to hold on to it longer than they should, causing some pressure to get there that wouldn't ordinarily get there. Now, behind this offensive line, the pressure is always going to get there. So if you hold on to the ball for even a beat longer, you're screwed. So I suspect, and the other thing that's not going to help him is we thought we were getting AJ Green back this week, and then he went out there for like 3 minutes, ran 5 yards, and had a setback.
Nothing, huh?
So AJ Green's probably not playing. So again, no receivers, terrible offensive line, and you're changing the one thing that's kind of making those things look a little bit better.
Yeah, Finley did a nice job in the preseason running that offense.
Yeah, but that was back when they actually had tackles and things.
Right. So, yeah, it could be a challenge. He also does a nice job on the in the boot action game. He did a nice, he makes quick decisions when he's on the move. There's a lot of things I liked about his game. Tools-wise, lacking. I mean, every time he was trying to throw the ball outside the numbers against good teams,
yeah,
it was kind of ugly. And now every team's good.
Yes.
Compared to the ACC.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens with Finley.
So that's that side of the ball.
But then, real quick.
Okay.
How many yards are the Ravens going to rush for against this Bengals run defense?
Many.
Like close to a million or?
Probably not a million. I mean, that's quite a lot of yards. But yeah, we got Lamar Jackson, who obviously is flavor of the month, having knocked off the Patriots.
Can you go to, like, we talked about Kansas City last week, stack in the box. They've got the lowest graded run defense in our league, in the league, right?
Yeah.
They stack the box against the Minnesota Vikings, which you can do when you don't have to worry about the quarterback running, right? So they can slow down Dalvin Cook. Do you go 9-man box against Lamar and just be like, listen, yes. Listen.
100%.
I know you're passing better than you ever have.
Yeah.
But do it over and over.
It's all about.
And over again.
Yeah. It's all about the.
And if I give up a couple big plays, you know.
Look, it's all about playing the percentages, right? Lamar Jackson is definitely passing better than he did before. He's capable of hitting big passes over the top. On the other hand, what is your alternative? If I sit back here and just play regular defense, they're going to march up and down the field all day. I'm not going to be able to stop them.
Yeah.
So you might as well sell out. Same way. Look, it was like exactly the same as the Chiefs did to the Vikings, right? It's like, yes, Kirk Cousins can make these plays, but if I'm offered, like, if I'm given the choice, do I let them establish their run game with Dalvin Cook all day and we can't stop that because we kind of suck at stopping the run? Or do I sell out and make sure we're stopping that and decide that, you know, given the balance of probabilities, Kirk Cousins is probably going to miss a few of these enough to make it that the better plan? I think this is the same thing with the Ravens. If you do nothing, they will just run the ball all day and you won't stop them once. Or you can sell out, completely stop the run and say, let's take our chances. Let's see what Lamar can do as a passer. And if he kills us that way, yeah, all right, we suck. You know, if he doesn't, maybe that was the better way of going.
Bengals did all right in the first matchup. This actually might be in Baltimore. Is it in Baltimore? It's at the Bengals.
Well, just copied the thing. Don't
blame
me.
So it's at the Bengals. I was just thinking back to the game before. I was like, okay, I think it was in Baltimore previously. By the way, on a video yesterday, it might be posted this weekend. Mm-hmm. George very confidently said, John Harbaugh is the best coach in the league right now.
Wow.
Now, I made him stop and I said, listen, you can't, like, what do you mean? Like, because everybody's going to say, well, it's Belichick, right? Like, if you're just ranking coaches in the NFL, I'm sure most people would put Belichick number one. George mostly meant decision making.
Yeah.
But he's also taking everything into account in that he said, I have Lamar. We're going to build around his skill set. I'm going to let Greg Roman run the offense and do what he needs to do with that. I'm going to start going forward on fourth down and giving us 25% more downs. There's a lot of decision making that rolls in there. Is that a crazy statement? That John Harbaugh is the best coach in the league right now, all things considered.
I mean, yeah, maybe.
That's what I was trying to tell him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're saying he's been making the most decisions that add win probability.
So I could see an argument to say he's the best in-game coach in the NFL.
That's what I was trying to get at.
And even then, I don't know that that's true because Belichick might not make as many sort of fourth down/punt, you know, that kind of stuff. But he adjusts schematically in-game better than maybe any coach in the NFL.
Yeah, completely agree.
So, yeah, I would struggle to put him above Belichick, but we've talked before. I 100% buy into the idea that you get such a huge advantage by coaches that just consistently make the right mathematical decision with the fourth down, with the 2-point stuff, with all that stuff.
And that's where the Ravens are right now.
Right. So I guess I don't know how you weight the other stuff.
Overall coaching comes in everything.
So you can kind of quantify what effect that's having, right? But how do you quantify Belichick goes in there at halftime, adjusts what they're doing on the back end and defense, and suddenly they shut down the opposition?
Or just the idea that, like, Kyle Van Noy is an afterthought of a player and you found something useful out of
Jamie
him. Like
Collins,
all of that, right?
From sucking to be, you know,
all of that stuff is kind of rolled into
all those DBs, Jason McCourty, JC Jackson, like their coverage numbers are absurd.
Right.
And if you took them anywhere else, would they be good?
Right.
Probably not. Gilmore, obviously, the exception.
But so, all that said, even though we want people to throw the damn ball, you know when it's efficient to run the ball? When you're picking up like 4 yards before contact.
You're a hell of a lot better than the opposition. Yeah,
that too. So the Ravens, you guys can keep running it. George posted the stat. I think their rushing EPA, expected points added, would rank like 17th among passing offenses.
Yeah.
So there is a point when you can rush it efficiently where it makes sense. And right. The Ravens are there right now.
And that was the point they brought up on the broadcast on Sunday Night Football was, you know, most players, most teams passing the ball is significantly higher, just yards per attempt, right, than rushing. Whereas Lamar Jackson, it's not, right? Lamar Jackson's average carry is like the same as Lamar Jackson's average pass, at which point it's not an obvious thing to just say, well, just pass the ball more.
All right, we're all taking Baltimore.
Yep. Detroit Lions at Chicago Bears, NFC North battle, and I really couldn't figure out what I was most interested in seeing in this one. What have you gone with?
So Stafford against the Bears defense, which is still legit. Stafford's in the midst of one of the best seasons of his career. We've talked quite a bit about him. He's number two in big-time throws behind Russell Wilson this year. Love how he's attacking down the field, doing everything we love for Matthew Stafford. There was even a whole article written this week about all the no-look throws that he's making. And remember, I used to always say there's, those three games. He'd have three games in the big pie where he was like the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
He'd be doing the no look stuff. He just had this good feel. Like you could tell when Matthew Stafford's in the zone, like he's in the zone right now. But it's a pretty good Chicago defense in Chicago that he's going up against.
It is. Not
what they were.
Right. They have regressed.
Expected regression, but they're still a challenging
team.
Took
a while to do it, but
go up against.
What's amazing to me about Trubisky is that he hasn't actually made that many horrendous plays.
Turnover-worthy stuffs?
Yeah.
Not bad.
So he's got 12 turnover-worthy plays, which is the same as Matthew Stafford, which is one fewer than Andy Dalton and Kyle Allen, two fewer than Deshaun Watson. He's not made any good plays. Any, ever.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing good there. He only has three interceptions this year?
I didn't know that.
Now, three interceptions and 12 turnover that he plays in and of itself tells a bit of a story. But
he's got some turnover luck for the second straight year.
Yeah. And yet, people have still come to the conclusion that he's terrible because he's just not making any positive plays at this point.
Yeah. So we basically said, here's what our QB numbers have said through the years. We always say, the QB owns this, owns that. They certainly own their negatives more than they own their positives.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to miss X number of throws each year and it's going to be in the vicinity unless you completely change your style. Right. You could go from throwing 10 yards per attempt down the field to six. Right.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much going to have the same number of negatives. The positives are largely dictated by supporting cast, play calling, and all that stuff. And I think that's where Trubisky is right now. Last year, he had one of the best. Nagy ranked as one of the best play callers. Plus, he was getting positive grades or plays on easy throws. That's kind of an aside.
Yeah.
But the positive grades have come down in large part because of circumstances.
Baker Mayfield, everyone says Baker's playing terribly, and he's averaging almost 2 yards per attempt more than Trubisky. Luke Falk looked like he'd never seen a football before, and he averaged 0.2 yards per attempt less than Trubisky. Basically, yikes. That's what you're dealing with. That's the level he was at, is Luke Falk, but with some athleticism. He's playing horrendously. I'm still of the opinion that, look, I've said before, I think they need to bench him because you just can't let a guy play at this level and keep trucking along and expect it to be okay.
I mean, Chase Daniel has one game that's been better than every game Trubisky's played the last 2 years outside of two games. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I'm not sure I'd go quite on board with that.
Chase Daniel's first game, the game against Minnesota this year, just pure
efficiency,
the right man.
Just restricted to this year, right? Chase Daniel has had his game that's better than anything Trubisky's done this year. My point is essentially, yes, I think you should bench him, but I'm also, you can't surely continue to play this badly all the time.
Oh, I agree with that.
Like, he wasn't this bad the first 2 years. He wasn't as good as everyone thought he was.
No, it wasn't this bad.
This is horrendous. Like, surely at some point, we have like a half-decent Trubisky game.
Yeah.
Were you at all concerned by the fact that he told people that he was trying to get all the TVs turned off in the building because he was sick of people bitching about the Bears? I'm not concerned about him doing it. It feels silly to say that to people.
Yeah, the fact that
out
it came
loud,
out.
Where they would write it down and report it to other people.
That feels a little silly to me.
Doesn't it?
The fact that it came out.
And, you know, surely he should know that by now.
Yeah.
Like, this is year three, right? You've been around the game for a while. You know, like, that doesn't make you look good.
I don't like to put too much stock into QB interviews and quotes and all that stuff. But I'll also say this. You know how, like, a lot of times college coaches say negative things about their quarterbacks when they come out, like Brian Kelly and Jim Mora and all that stuff? They're not always wrong. Everybody loves to hate those coaches. Oh, that jerk. They're not always wrong. Pete Carroll with Mark Sanchez, right? The coaches sometimes are right. So I think with the quarterback quotes and press conferences and like the perception that you get, as much as our whole life is built around data,
yeah,
grading every play and all that stuff, but if you don't think you can glean a little bit from how people handle themselves and all that stuff, I mean, there's people misinterpreting stuff too. Like Cam Newton's gone through a lot of stuff, but at the same time, Cam Newton, right? Kind of an emotional press conference type of guy.
Uh-huh.
So it was Jamie. Like some guys that are more emotional in their press conferences and in the way they attack things are also the guys that are a little bit more volatile on the field. Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. What's interesting is that everybody tries to, nobody has yet been able to divine a particularly good way of identifying football intelligence, right? Which is what everyone's shooting for.
FBI even.
Okay. It's what everybody's shooting for this pre-draft process, right? Like the Wunderlich was supposed to do that, but it doesn't. It just tells you whether a guy's vaguely smart or not. But there's two completely different things, right? Like Dan Marino is not the most book smart human being in the world, but you put him out in a football field, he just knew how to get it done. Now, so people are trying to essentially identify what that is and how do we test for that and all that kind of stuff. And that's why, you know, we pull him in, we get him on the chalkboard, we do all this kind of stuff. I think there is definitely something to like a basic level of common sense and intellect at work that you can glean from talking to a quarterback that you kind of assume all these guys have, but they don't. And so when we had Zach, right, you talk to Zach, it's amazing. The stuff like Zach had, the brain that you think every quarterback should have, right?
Right.
Which is no matter what's happening, he's able to tell you what went on, what the coverage was, what the progression was, what he was working to, what you should look, you know, this whole library on every single play. Like, yeah, that's what a quarterback should be. I'm not surprised. He's a backup quarterback. So he should have that. The starters definitely do it. They just have slightly better physical tools. Right. But then you hear stuff from other quarterbacks. And you're like, wow, it's not universal. Some of these guys don't have that. And some of them leave little tells about themselves. Right. So it's difficult to know where to go with the Jared Goff thing because he's been up and down. He's dealt with his own issues. But like, when they had the thing on Hard Knocks, it was like he didn't know which way the sun came up. Like, that's not good. Like,
sometimes
I'm not saying
it's either or. You just forget.
I'm not saying, you know, he doesn't know where the sun comes up, therefore he sucks. But I'm saying that has to, at the very minimum, concern you about his, you know, level of what's going on behind the curtains back there. And Trubisky as well. Like, if you can't see that telling a reporter that is not a good thing, I have concerns.
Yeah.
It feels like something that you should immediately just know by now that's a silly thing to do.
I would just say, look,
now maybe
there's a lot of negativity out there. I'm just trying to block it out.
Sure, exactly.
Look, I went 0-for-4 at the Y the other day. My team lost all four games. There's a lot of negativity around the office right now.
You weren't happy.
I'm trying to block it out.
Yeah.
Rather than I shut down every conversation about the 0-4 and shut down the TVs and all that stuff.
I don't understand how a quarterback cannot see that that's a silly thing to do.
Anyway, I'm taking Detroit in this one.
You went Detroit. I went Chicago. I'm hitching my wagon to the bisque.
Huh. Do you think about these picks before you make them?
I can't tell you how much I don't.
Maybe we should do the podcast before we make the picks as we talk our way through them.
You can't really complain since I appear to be beating you in picks.
Huh.
All right. Arizona Cardinals at Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Look at you. You are.
I know. What do you got in this one, Steve? Oh, you don't have anything in this one.
Yeah. Could you take a hint?
You want me to tell you what I want to see?
I didn't write anything down.
I'm kind of annoyed that
Jameis Kyler won.
Yeah, I'm kind of annoyed that it looks like David Johnson is going to play. Not because I don't like David Johnson, but because I really liked the potential of Kenyon Drake in this offense.
Love the Drake.
And what's really intriguing is, so the one thing that Tampa Bay can do is stop the run, right? But how much of that can you essentially eradicate with an offense that will take people out of the box? Because one of the biggest influencers of how successful you're going to be running the ball is basically box count, right? If you can determine the, and the offense controls that, right? Like theoretically the defense does, because, you know, you can stick nine guys in there, but you're not going to if there's a slot receiver on either side.
These are
going to
match up with right. the formation.
So practically speaking, the offense controls how many players the defense puts in the box. So let's say that the thing, Tampa Bay is going to stop the run really well against most teams, but the Cardinals can go out there, spread them wide, force them to keep players out of the box, and potentially still run the ball really well with Kenyon Drake, and I suppose David Johnson, he's, you know, he's okay. That's what I'm looking for. I'm going to see how that works.
So we've experimented with the midweek podcast just being the mailbag.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the one where we just talk about just your favorite
guys.
Players.
We could do that.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Of course, this podcast becomes that.
Yeah, yeah.
Who do you want to say, well, my favorite player?
Maybe we just make all the shows that. We just run through the guys that I like.
And the bottom line will be like how...
a ticker.
Let's do a ticker.
It's just the
on Sam's guys yeah, and
just
Steve's
the grade
guys.
Of all my guys, how they played this week.
Well, I don't have as many guys. So you make fun of me for having all my guys in the...
Well, you have like 300 guys at draft time, and then you just lose interest in them once they get to the NFL.
I see the best.
They're Mingo.
I see the best, you know, what can they do, not what can't yeah. they do. I focus on what they can do.
I have loyalty. I stick with my guys from the moment I see them right up until the bitter end.
Yeah, I think your loyalty is a little blind.
It's not. Well, with some people, maybe. But most, I can be persuaded to come off a guy. It takes a while, though.
So Chandler Jones against the Bucs tackles.
Oof.
Namely Donovan Smith.
Yeah.
Something to keep an eye on. And then does your boy, speaking of your guys, well, you didn't like Andy as much as we did.
No.
It was Andy Isabella.
The Russian pencil.
Get some more run after his 88-yard touchdown last week on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah. Passer rating when targeting Andy Isabella this season. Perfect. Maybe you might want to throw more than one pass.
Yeah, because of that one pass.
Yeah, well, look, it worked, didn't it? Maybe throw him the ball more.
Did it work? Yes.
Yes, yes, it worked.
When you have a guy like Jordan Hicks in the middle of the defense and Jameis Winston on the other side, so you got a nice, you know, pretty good playmaking linebacker in the middle, I'm calling a Jordan Hicks pick.
Okay.
Of Jameis Winston.
Nice.
What do you think?
I mean, I could see that. To be honest, I could see a pick from anybody when Jameis Winston's playing.
Yeah, I'm not going. Maybe Terrell Suggs.
You know what's interesting about Donovan Smith?
What's that?
He's not catastrophically bad, but there are plays in every single game where he is.
Yeah.
So it's like overall, like right now he's got a pass blocking grade of 71.9, which is, it's all right. It's not terrible. He's given up 4 sacks, which is not great, but neither is it terrible. But 22 total pressures, that's not horrendous.
It's one.
But there are, like, every single game, there are plays where it's like, that's embarrassing. Like, that's disgusting. Somebody is coming along on Monday in the film review room and is like, what the hell is this? Like, what are you even doing? And there's multiple ones of those in every single game.
Yeah, it's one of the things we're continuing to study as we study player progression and all that stuff. But intuitively, it feels like there are a lot of offensive linemen who do take 3 or 4 years before they even just become reasonable players. But you got to really struggle, or you have to just deal with incompetence on your team for 3 to 4 years. I mean, it's the same thing we're saying about Bud Dupree. You had to get through 4 years of bad, below average play from Bud Dupree to get to his promise.
Yeah.
In year 5. Donovan Smith's in the same spot. We saw this with Eric Fisher with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. And so it's possible he gets sort of, he improves to this level where he's fine. But the other thing is he feels like a player where, I don't know if it's an effort thing or what the reason is, but like he's a guy that will be okay most of the time, but when he gets beat, it's horrific. Like it's just ugly.
Yeah.
Like the number of, and they look like, it's difficult to tell because, you know, when you're 330 pounds or whatever and 6 foot, you know, tall people like you, sometimes it can look a little ungainly.
Describing my dimensions here?
I mean, even if it isn't, sometimes it can look a little ungainly because these people aren't the most graceful athletes in the world. So when it goes wrong, it looks, you know, it looks
he bad. Does have some bad.
So he has all these plays that just look like complete lack of effort plays. Where you're like, yeah, I'm just not bothered today. Is this snap? I have no interest in. So if you want to go around the outside, feel free.
That's how I used to think Martellus Bennett was as a run blocker. But it was more like he was really good and effortless. Like he'd have like really good hand position. He'd look like he's just like steering guys, but not really trying all that hard because he was pretty good at it. Anyway, we're all going Tampa Bay. This is not one of the ones I expected to be
universal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or unanimous.
That too.
Oh, look at this game.
The Battle of New York in New Jersey. New York Giants at the New York Jets.
So many storylines. I made the statement, the 2018 draft, that the Saquon Barkley, Sam Darnold progression would just be multiple years of just stories, right? New York versus New York. Giants take Saquon, pass on Darnold. We're all going to be staring at that thing and thinking, what if?
Yeah.
Now, Darnold's been disappointing, especially in recent weeks. Yes. And then the Giants still drafted a quarterback the next year and Daniel Jones.
So that, yeah, it sort of transforms the focus, right? From Saquon versus Sam Darnold every year to, well, all right, now it's the quarterback. And now it's the quarterback they passed. They passed on Sam Darnold to take Saquon. And then next year, come back, we get Daniel Jones. So now it's Jones versus Sam Darnold. And that's its own interesting dynamic.
Daniel Jones has a 64.5 overall grade. Promising.
The second most turnover worthy plays in the NFL behind only Jameis Winston. Yeah.
He did the same thing Monday night. He had some good ones. He had some bad ones on Monday Night Football in front of the world. Sam Darnold, though, 48.9 grade, which has just been
bad.
Horrendous the last few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam Darnold has. At least Daniel Jones is making some big time throws on the other side of that.
Oh, he's making plays.
I mean, honestly, he is Jameis Winston light. Light refers to volatility rather than like quality.
Yeah.
So he's like slightly less volatile than Jameis Winston. You know, like a periodic table, there's the reactive metals, and like each one reacts even more violently in water. You know, basically explodes, turns into a bomb, right? So Daniel Jones is like one step down on the reactive metals list to Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston's like full cesium or whatever it is, the full like boom, just explodes in a vat of water. Daniel Jones like the next one down, potassium or whatever it is.
You're on a roll.
Thanks.
I can't compete. I can't compete with you comparing quarterbacks to the periodic
to reactive
table.
Metals.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I can't remember what the sequence is, but yeah, he's one down.
I had a high school classmate create a periodic table of our graduating class. Graduated with like 140.
Okay.
And he somehow created a pretty well structured, like here's the jocks and here's the nerds and here's the this and here's the that. And it like kind of, you know, how it's supposed to work, you know, works
right,
both ways.
Blocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He somehow like slotted everybody in the right spot.
Wow.
And it was like, wow,
that's a lot of effort for something that's. Has no purpose.
Yeah, he was one of the dorks. He was one of like the top right dorks or whatever. Yeah, so he did a good job with it though. Good job, man.
Did you know that there's a website called the Dynamic Periodic Table?
No.
Neither did I.
Kind of wish I thought of that. So yeah, this is going to be a fascinating New York matchup. Man, the Jets, they're talking about firing Adam Gase. Is he the wrong guy? I mean, the fact that the GM, Douglas, did not... choose Gase. I mean, that's got to come to a head at some point, right?
Right. He's not exactly endearing himself to the long-term success of this franchise/roster. Things are not going well in New York. You know, did you hear that apparently the Pittsburgh Steelers inquired about bringing Le'Veon Bell back before the trade deadline?
Really?
When they lost James Conner.
Because that's what they're missing.
Then as well. How awkward would that have been? So we didn't want to pay you, but now that you got a deal from somewhere else and you got a bit of the guaranteed money, like we'll take you back because we lost all our running backs.
That'd be like everybody the Patriots deals with.
Yeah, but like people expect it from them. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
If the ending was that acrimonious between Pittsburgh and Le'Veon Bell, the idea that they would trade back for him, just expect him to walk back in the building all happy, seems iffy.
We also did a video this week about our biggest losers in free agency. Or the teams that just, you know, didn't have the best return.
Yeah, Jets.
And the Jets had the high-profile signings. C.J. Mosley, Le'Veon Bell. Tried to get Anthony Barr before that fell through. But, you know, kind of as expected there. Like, more of a run-stopping linebacker in Mosley, who's a pretty good linebacker and has been banged up. And then a running back didn't move the needle as much as maybe Jets fans had hoped.
I'm curious to see Danny Dimes versus a Greg defense, a Greg Williams defense.
Oh, yeah.
How much that materializes or how much that creates some turnover worthy plays.
He'll create a free rusher or two. I'm more worried about the fumbles in the pocket.
Okay. Apparently I got the medals in the wrong order. So like lithium is the hardcore, I think.
That's Jameis.
That's Jameis.
Okay.
So if lithium is Jameis, then Daniel's the next one down, which is sodium. Maybe I don't remember which one. Yeah, I think that's the order. I think lithium is the really reactive one, and then sodium, potassium, rubidium, cesium.
Where are the noble gases? Is that
part of me?
Like Alex Smith's more noble gas type guy.
Alex Smith is argon.
Is argon?
Yeah.
Let's do a whole breakdown.
Now I'm confused because I think I might have it upside down. Maybe it is cesium that's the most, and then that would make Danny Dimes rubidium.
I mean, that sounds right. Feels like a rubidium.
You don't have a clue, do you?
No, I'm just trying to agree.
Okay. All right.
But you don't have much of a clue. You're just making stuff up.
I just can't remember which order it is. I can't remember whether it goes top to bottom or bottom to top.
I just know that
you don't even know what we're talking about.
I just know that Alex Smith's with the noble gases.
Right, you're just like nodding and smiling for the last 5 minutes. Anyway,
maybe you get your metaphor right.
I went with the periodic New York table. Jets.
What did I take?
The Giants. Most people went with the Giants, in fact.
Well, it's a home game.
I don't like the fact that I'm out on an island with Austin.
Giants get a free home game this year.
Yeah, with Austin, who's like 10 wins worse than everybody else.
Yeah, why is he so bad at this?
I don't know. Anyway, moving on. Kansas City Chiefs at Tennessee Titans. Is Mahomes going to be back?
Is he?
I think so.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this week was the first time that he's fully practiced since he, his kneecap fell off.
I don't know if he supposed to have full mobility?
Yeah.
Because he didn't look good moving the last couple of weeks when all those clips of him
running around.
Yeah.
Like jogging in practice and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, presumably he was going easy, right? You're not going to go hardcore sprinting.
But he still had like a limp, right? So is that, is this to the point where it's like, all right, it's good enough to play. You're not going to hurt it anymore. Or you're like legit 100% do everything. Because I think it's going to be, look, the Titans, I know Malcolm Butler's out, but I always say the Titans have that defense. They got a few guys who can cover on the back end. They like to throw a lot of five-man pressures at you up front. They might be able to keep him in the pocket. And if he tries to escape and he can't do it, we're missing some of Mahomes' game here. Mm. Can you stop researching over there, please?
I'm trying to. No, it's bugging me now.
We'll just add an addendum to the podcast about which elements is Jameis and which is Daniel Jones. You don't have to get it right now.
I think I do.
People get the point.
For my own sanity, I need to get it right.
We've moved. We're on to Kansas City, Tennessee.
Okay, fine. Right.
Mahomes might not be able to move as well as he was.
Sure.
It limits him a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
But even a hobbled Patrick Mahomes is better than Matt Moore.
Yeah, we're all taking Kansas City. I get it.
Right. So what's your point?
Tyreek Hill's now our highest graded receiver. Is that right?
Yeah. He's really absurdly good.
Sometimes it's tough for like a true deep threat to have the volume to grade at the top of our system. But Tyreek's just been so dominant.
So the crazy thing about him is that he's good at everything. He's extremely fast. He's extremely quick, which don't often combine together. And for a small receiver, he's one of the best contested catch guys in the NFL.
Definitely what separates him. 90.5 overall grade, 90.6 receiving grade, 142.5 passer rating when targeting Tyreek.
And honestly, I think those things kind of work together as well because people are so terrified of his speed, you kind of forget that he can do the other stuff as well. Like you're so losing your mind trying to keep in phase with him as you're sprinting down the field, you completely forget about the fact that the ball is about to arrive and he's just going to jump up over your head and take it away from you.
It's really amazing too, because he has that skill set that offensive coordinators are like, oh yeah, jet sweeps, bubble screens, we're going to get the ball in this guy's hands.
Yep.
And that's how he started his career. And then if you even just don't even do that ever, he's still one of the best receivers. Like if you just keep him as an outside receiver, that's just going to take the top off the defense, so to speak.
Yep.
Can Tannehill keep it going on the other side? 3 straight games over 70.
The luster came off a little bit.
It came off a little bit.
He's Ryan Tannehill, so we're not expecting miracles here.
Still showing that accuracy that he's got. Still taking a few too many.
Every week.
Tennessee Titans out of the podcast.
We did, yeah. They now have a quarterback that you kind of know where he's going to be, right? In this stable level. It's more how everything else plays, and that's been the big variable.
Nate Davis on the interior with a 28 or 29 grade
right
now. Chris Jones.
Oh, no.
Who has been playing more. He's had to play some defensive end.
Right, but isn't that one of those ones where you look at the matchup and paper and say you don't go against anybody else in this entire game?
Should probably line him up on the rook.
Right, every single snap you're going up against Nate Davis.
So
have fun.
Matchup to watch there, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that's good. I think it could be crushing. Yeah, everyone in Kansas City, as you said. Miami Dolphins at the Indianapolis Colts. What are you looking for, Steve?
Where's Brissett's injury at?
You don't know that? You might want to, you didn't want to look up that.
Well, based off the information you have here, QB opposites.
Well, yes, of course, you assumed that I checked that before I put that down in the notes. Let's find out, shall we?
So Ryan Fitz, after leading the Dolphins to their first and only victory.
Yes.
I mean, he's really going to screw them out of draft position, isn't he?
The Colts are encouraged after Jacoby Brissett has limited practice on Wednesday.
They're encouraged?
Practicing again on Thursday.
I say we record one Brissett segment.
This also used the term encouraged.
Wow. They must really be encouraged.
They're very encouraged over his two-day practice routine.
So you got two opposite quarterbacks.
So I'm going to say, let's say that Jacoby Brissett is starting because A, they're very encouraged by how he's practicing. And B, I've written it down in such a way that I assume he is. Jacoby Brissett against Ryan Fitzpatrick might be the two most polar opposites you're going to see in a quarterback battle this year. You've got YOLO Fitz over there, who's just slinging the ball left and right, trying to make stuff happen. Doesn't care how many turnovers it takes. He's going to make a touchdown thing. He's going to make some magic happen. And then you've got Jacoby Brissett, who's all about the, low risk. Don't screw it up. Don't force a turnover. Just take what's there. Get yourself out of the way. Make sure everyone else has a chance to win this game for you. Just don't be the reason we lose. It's incredible just seeing the two completely different attitudes of the two quarterbacks.
Yeah, I want to see Quentin Nelson up front. But yeah, so let me just follow up on your thing before we get to the O-line stuff. Yes, complete opposites. I do wonder if there's mobility issues with Brissett as well, right? If he's limited as far as pocket movement goes and all that stuff, trying to get rid of the ball quickly, should be a little bit easier against this this Dolphins secondary, getting rid of the ball and letting playmakers do the work. I think the Colts are going to want to pound the rock, though.
Yes.
They're going to think protect Brissett, and they're going to think we got one of the best offensive lines. They should be able to beat up this defensive front. Top-graded interior defensive lineman against the run for the Dolphins, John Jenkins, 71.2.
That's not ideal.
They should be able to have some success on that interior. So I want to see Quentin Nelson against all those guys, Devon Godshaw, and all the interior guys. Christian Wilkins, the rookie, who has been a little disappointing, the first rounder.
We talk sometimes about how you're so sort of lost in the weeds of how people are playing and the nuts and bolts of it that you forget the box score numbers. And then every now and again, you look up and you're like, wow.
Yeah, what you got?
Have you seen Jacoby Brissett's numbers?
The stats, yeah.
Yeah. They're nuts.
They're really good.
Yeah.
That's
way different to his PFF grade.
That's why Chris Sims has him as like his eighth best quarterback.
It is.
Above Drew Brees and Dak Prescott.
Right. Which, if you've watched those guys play, you say is lunacy. Right. And then, so I basically tweeted that, right? But I had a bunch of people like, what are you talking about? He's been great because they're winning games. His numbers are fantastic. Therefore, he's been amazing. But he really hasn't been. Like, Brissett, as we talked about, has been good enough to not screw up and lose a lot of games. But he hasn't actually been playing that well. But his numbers...
He would be a statistical regression
huge
candidate.
Huge statistical regression candidate. Like, he has, 14 touchdowns and 3 interceptions? Yeah. And a 60 grade.
Especially the touchdown percentage that is so high.
So, it's an interesting... the two comparisons, right? The two players either side of him, just sorted by touchdowns. Carson Wentz has 15 touchdowns, 4 picks. So, similar numbers. And Tom Brady has 14 touchdowns, 5 picks. Again, similar numbers. Brady and Wentz have 85 and 87 grades, and Jacoby Brissett has a 60.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is those three players are not playing at the same level.
The way to interpret it is when you see the difference in grade and general statistical output is something's happening with the playmakers making plays, right? Or they're scheming it up really well, or the defenses that they've played have been really bad. Or some combination of all that. And I think the tough thing for people to wrap their head around sometimes is if you just like list the Colts playmakers, it's like, oh, T.Y. Hilton and who else?
I mean,
right?
It's a lot of time as well.
Yeah, and he has. But like, you're not looking at the Colts playmakers being like, oh, wow, they're incredible. They're carrying Jacoby Brissett. But if the numbers are telling us that those guys are playing above the quarterback, or there's just some general locker scheming in there. Okay. So that's just the way to look at it.
We're
all taking the Colts.
All of us went the Colts. Two more games to get through. Los Angeles Rams at the Pittsburgh Steelers. What are you interested in here, Stephen?
Well, we get this Rams O-line that is
bad.
Yeah, one of the stories of the season. Them dropping off so far.
Yeah.
And then we've talked a lot on the podcast here. Bud Dupree's playing pretty well now. TJ Watt, our number three graded pass rusher in the entire NFL. We had that at PFF.com this week.
Mm-hmm.
Ranked all of our pass rushers. So, and it's close at the top. It's like a 91.3 to 0.2 to 0.1. I mean, it's all really close. TJ Watt's right there near the top. So those two guys going up against Whitworth and Havenstein.
Yeah.
On the edge, I think.
Havenstein continues to be one of the great unexplained what the hell happened there mysteries of the NFL this season.
Yeah.
He has not been good at all. TJ Watt has 42 total pressures, which ranks him in the top 10, as you said, the best grade. So he's been playing in and above the amount of pressure he's been able to get. That should be a huge advantage for the Steelers. Generally, I think that defensive front versus that offensive line is a massive advantage. Like, how the hell do the Rams block that group of Steelers pass rushers? TJ Watt, Bud Dupree, the interior as well. Okay, they've lost bodies there, but they still have Cameron Hayward playing an extremely high level. You still have linebackers that can blitz. Like, that's going to be a problem for the Rams.
I still think the Rams are going to be okay. Because even despite Jared Goff increasing his negatively graded throws by 5 or 6%, which is huge, and the offensive line regressing, they're still pretty much finding ways to put up points, right?
Yeah.
So they're putting up points. The Steelers defense has fully settled into the defense we talk about every year, that they're kind of, they're good against not so great quarterbacks. Like, they were really good against Miami. They were good against the Bengals. Didn't do anything against Brady and the Patriots, Wilson and the Seahawks, Garoppolo and the 49ers. Like, they had their worst games against the better quarterbacks for the most part. Mm-hmm. Held their own against the Ravens. That was fine. Did a pretty nice job against Phillip Rivers. Fine. But I think overall, that's their defense. Like, their defense just kind of like the Kirk Cousins of defenses. Right?
So, yeah. The interesting thing, though, so I think that they're going to have a big advantage up front when it comes to rushing the passer versus that Rams offensive line. But where the Rams are really good is in forcing you into ugly mismatches on the back end. So you think back to that Vikings game where they kept getting Todd Gurley and Cooper Kupp matched up with Anthony Barr in space. And it was just a disaster. The Vikings had no answer. Like, if the Steelers' big weakness is there's a lot of players on the back end. Now, some of them are playing well in terms of, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick since coming over has been really good. Mike Hilton, Cameron Sutton, they've got some good graded players on the back end. But if you can start manufacturing mismatches with their linebackers, like, Devin Bush is a really talented rookie, but his biggest weakness, I think, is in coverage. I think you can cause some problems if you get him matched up with players in space. Vince Williams, another my guy, love Vince Williams for probably the dumbest reason of any player that I love. Vince, not great in space and in coverage.
No, not good.
More of a downhill thumper is Vince, but can be exposed in coverage. So, and then obviously you've got, like, Mark Barron is still playing for them. Mark Barron is just not a good football player. So again, match these guys up in space. So I think as much as the Steelers are going to have a big advantage rushing the passer, I think the Rams have a potentially big advantage just in terms of matching up in coverage.
Yeah. And then
which way does that break?
And then on the other side, I'm still not trusting Mason Rudolph just yet. You know, they did get rid of Dante Moncrief.
Hmm. Somebody picked him up. Like, what the hell does that guy have over the league? Like, somebody claimed him on waivers.
He's not a bad number five receiver.
Isn't he? I'm just like, I asked the question way back at the start. What are people expecting to happen to Dante Moncrief?
He's still young.
And why?
He's still young. So, yeah, I just don't trust Mason Rudolph right now.
No.
He's, you know, had a nice game last week. They're still leaving some plays on the field and thrown some in harm's way. I think it's going to be tough against Wade Phillips. That defense, the revamped defense with Jalen Ramsey, Troy Hill out there. But yeah, I like the Rams in this one.
Yep.
You too?
I'm pretty sure. Yes. Also went with the Rams. A couple of people taking the Steelers. Three people, in fact.
The Steelers have, I mean, they're 4-4.
Yeah.
They're showing signs of life. I think as a fan, even though you're losing your quarterback, you don't love that. It's kind of an exciting time. Like, you've got to, you have to, like, everything else has to go really well, right? You have to, rally around Mason Rudolph.
Particularly if you just trade away your first round pick.
Well, that too. But it also, like, it's kind of like, I think as a fan, it's kind of like this, all right, we got to step it up. We got to root for this defense. And we got, you know, these other guys need to step up. We need other guys to really contribute. And it's like, wow, we're 4-4. Like, we're actually, we thought the season might be over. We're going for the number one overall pick. Before you know it, we're fighting for a playoff spot. And I think if you're a Steelers fan, it might be cool to, like, sneak into the playoffs and see what you could do and hope that everything else can kind of come together. So it's as bad as it is, you lose Big Ben, and if he's out there, you're probably right up there with Houston and Kansas City trying to figure out who's going to knock off New England. But I'm sure it's not a bad feeling if you're the Steelers having a little signs of life and, you know, trying to sneak into like a 9-7 playoff type team.
I mean, just in abstract terms, it's a really interesting game between two teams that we sort of thought would be contenders, right? Now they're not for slightly different reasons. And that obviously Big Ben going down massively changes everything. But you've got two teams that we assumed would be, you know, fighting it out for playoff supremacy and are both kind of desperately trying to keep things on track. Like, the Steelers have snuck their way back into the conversation again at 500. The Rams, like, they have the 49ers taken off into the distance. A bunch of other NFC teams looking really good. Like, they need to get their house in order just to be relevant at the end of the season.
Well, speaking of the 49ers.
Hello. What a transition that is, Steve. Nicely done. This is why you usually do this. Not
Let me introduce the last game. Yeah. Seattle Seahawks at the San Francisco 49ers.
Monday Night Football.
This is a good Monday Night Football game.
It's the first good Monday Night Football on paper for a while, right?
Yes.
Can you imagine how much Booger is going to love talking about establishing the run in this game?
Oh, there's a lot of run establishment.
49ers
here.
And Seahawks.
Look, I know you got Russell Wilson, but until you run the ball 26 times, you're not going to have open throws for him.
He's going to be so happy. This is going to be his element.
We got the boss, Chris, on Sunday Night Football saying you don't even need play action. You don't even need the run game to run play action.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the data says.
Yep.
And then Boog telling us, you know
not
what?
So
you got to waste 70% of your plays before you can run one good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just got to run the ball.
Did you see the run the ball more?
Doesn't matter where.
Yeah.
Just run it. So, yeah. So, Seattle
and
at San Francisco.
Ironically, the thing that I am actually interested in seeing is how much success the Seahawks are going to have running the ball right up the middle at this team. Because I think that that's the way to actually get at this 49ers defense. And I think that's the thing that the Seahawks want to do anyway. Therefore, how does that work? Like, the Seahawks are, I think, pretty firmly going to try and establish the crap out of the run right up the middle.
Yeah, I could see that. And look, and that's fine. I told you I liked how Seattle adjusted last week against a pretty good run defense in Tampa Bay. And they said, no, we're chucking it and we're putting it in Russell Wilson's hands and all that stuff. This is also the big test for the Niners defense that really hasn't played a whole lot of challenging offenses. We talk about defense being dictated again by the offense. You got to go up against the MVP in Seattle.
Yeah,
and a pretty difficult group of playmakers to cover now.
Well, with
Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and whenever Josh Gordon gets on the field.
So that'll be interesting. It's one of the most ridiculous looking receiving cores. Superman. You got Superman, and then you've got Tyler Lockett, like half their size. The guy who's better than like either of them.
Yeah. So it's a good matchup. And then, you know, San Francisco, they like to run the ball quite a bit. I think Seattle's defense is not great. I mean, this could be the time where they're like, hey, let's put the ball in Jimmy's hands and chuck it around just a little bit. It's not in the Shanahan nature.
No.
To do that a whole lot, though.
No. I mean,
unless you have a Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
Unless he has a Matt Ryan. I feel like he's going to treat Garoppolo like Matt Hasselbeck. The Matt Hasselbeck that he is.
The Matt Hasselbeck that he is.
You know, run game, play action, create those open throws that you always create.
Has anybody ever made that comparison before? Just you?
Just
me. Matt Hasselbeck.
I've made it for years now, but
yeah.
I've made it.
It's not the worst one in the world.
I think it's a good one. That's why I made it.
Well, yeah, well done.
I wouldn't make it if it wasn't a good one.
Okay, sure. I'm also interested in this Seattle linebacking group, how they do against George Kittle, because Kittle is absurd and phenomenal and by far the 49ers' best receiver right now. In theory, the Seahawks have a really good group of linebackers to potentially at least disrupt him or take him away. Bobby Wagner hasn't played at the same level that we were used to seeing him, where he's been the best linebacker in the game, as good as Luke Kuechly, phenomenal, 90 grades across the board. He's had a couple of games like that. His overall grade is 70 right now, and now his coverage grade is up at 90, 88.8. So Bobby Wagner, but also KJ Wright, Michael Kendricks going up against George Kittle should be fun as well.
Yeah, this is also like the Shanahan scheme is built to beat the Seattle defense.
Yes, this is
right to run those deep overs behind. I mean, this is what Shanahan did in 2017. Remember that game against Jacksonville?
Yep.
Jacksonville's defense was lights out. They were dominant. Jimmy G, Niners, Shanahan, they go out there and destroy them week 15, 16, whatever it was. Maybe it was Christmas Eve, week 16. Sound right? They just go out and crush them, dominate in the middle of the field. They ran the ball well against them. They ran play action well against them. It's built to beat that scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And that scheme relies heavily on their linebackers to read their keys, take away the middle of the field. That's where Jimmy likes to run the crossers, the deep dig route, all those big throws that he made against the Cardinals the other day.
Okay.
Last week.
So this should be a fun game.
Garoppolo's also, by the way, really coming off his best game of the season by far. He was very good.
So he hasn't been
against Arizona
for most of the games.
No.
Like we needed, like, that's what makes this team. They've been undefeated the whole way, and their quarterback hasn't actually been playing that well.
Yeah, he's up at 78.1, which jumped up like 6 or 7 points after an 85.9 grade at Arizona.
Yeah,
like where he tore it up.
If they get that level of play from him for the rest of the season, they become a much more terrifying prospect for teams that have to knock them off.
That's also, you know, he had to play in a rainstorm against Washington where only threw the ball 21 times, but there's other games. They only drop back 28, 27, 33, 30. Like, they're not putting a ton on his plate. Last week was the most dropbacks he had in the game, and it's still under 40.
Yeah.
So you've got two teams that really want to protect their quarterbacks,
yes,
in their mind.
Right.
And not let them drop back as much. But, of course, it's still probably going to come down to Russell Wilson versus Jimmy G. I think it's going to be a great one.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I think this is the best Monday Night Football game on paper in a long time.
Man, this should be good. Russell Wilson against this Niners defense. Number two pass rush, number two coverage unit by our numbers.
Niners. Richard, yes. Sherman is putting up some insane coverage numbers in terms of like passer rating against like 30, you know, back to the old
Sherman
spike in the ball deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's playing well. I think Witherspoon's numbers are pretty insane as well. Like that coverage unit is playing exceptionally well, buoyed by the fact that the pass rush has been so effective, which is why. Yeah.
Buoyed.
Well, I've told you, I refuse to say buoyed because it's just no.
I like buoyed.
No. But what's intriguing is I think that the Seahawks are going to come and they're not going to want to pass the ball. They're going to try and run it right up the gut and see how that works. And that is, I think, where this defense is at its weakest. So that dynamic is fascinating.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
All right. We're out. All games. I have an official rule.
Did you do a pick here?
I went with the 49ers. You went with the Seahawks.
I'm taking the Seahawks.
We're kind of split across the board on that one. It's an even split. I have an official ruling on the Jameis Daniel Jones metal comparison. So
your ability to research.
Jameis is cesium, right? The most reactive metal. And depending on whether you think he's one or two steps beneath him, Daniel Jones is either rubidium or potassium. So I had it right the first time, only I didn't remember rubidium was a thing.
He feels like a rubidium. Yeah.
So Daniel Jones is rubidium. Jameis Winston is cesium. They are the two most volatile metals in the NFL.
While you're there, do you have any other just obvious periodic table quarterback comparisons?
I mean, this is just the reactivity chart of metals. So you have to go to the next most volatile quarterback. Who's that?
Next most volatile?
Yeah.
I mean, Darnold.
Okay. Well, then Darnold is sodium.
Salty.
Hmm.
Hmm.
So you could take this a whole extra step.
Jay,
right?
Cutler is more of a sodium.
Well, you could just end up calling Darnold salt.
Salt.
Because he's the third most volatile quarterback in the NFL.
Salt.
Yeah.
Bad face. Salt.
Bad face. Loopy motion. Salt.
All right. Let's wrap it up.
Let's do it.
We got the new audio.
Yes. Only tell us if it's good.
Just tell us if it's good. Tell us if you can hear us better.
I don't want to hear it.
If I've been breathing too much into the mic, which is certainly a possibility,
yeah.
I don't want to hear about it.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
I mean, you can tell Steve. Just don't. I don't want to hear about it.
All right, guys. Everybody enjoy week 10. We'll be back here on Monday morning. Don't forget, go get your Throw the Damn Ball hat or shirt over at PFF Shop. Shop.pff.com.
There you go.
The PFF Shop, which is shop.pff.com. Special thanks to all of our sponsors today. We'll talk to you guys again Monday morning.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.